All right, says we are recording now. So why don't the two of you introduce yourselves? And since we already did a interview with Kim, I think I'll have more questions for Cody, but I'll have questions for both of you too. So why don't you introduce yourselves? Tell me who you are, where you live, where you're from, and when you were born.
I can do that, I guess. Kim Johnson. Right now I'm living in the Spring Hill area of Charleston, South Charleston.
Nice.
I live on the west side of Charleston right now, but I'm from Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
All right, and when were you born?
I was born in February 1989.
Cody, why don't you tell me about your background in old-time music and how you got introduced to it and became involved?
Okay. Well, I played music most, you know, growing up and everything, but not old-time music. And then when I started college, we moved to Huntington to go to Marshall, and like, I think it was kind of like a matter of circumstance, because we were living in apartments, and we were used to playing like rock and roll with like, you know, electric guitars and drums and stuff, but since we were living in apartments, we didn't really have a place to really do that, so we were kind of just fooling around with like different acoustic music and just kind of making up our own thing. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know exactly how I ended up, you know, I was definitely aware of like bluegrass music and stuff. I'd gone to bluegrass concerts and stuff growing up and everything, but I never played and wasn't really that avid of a fan or anything like that. But I think that kind of, we were kind of leaning in that direction and kind of getting in that kind of stuff. And then just, so I don't know, somehow we kind of found old time music, probably like,
I think I lost you for a second.
Well, anyway, we were kind of looking for something to play, and then we knew, you know, we knew about the Vandalia Gathering and Cliff Top. Uh-huh. So we would go up there, you know, and I guess that was kind of our first exposure to it for real. And then, you know, me and another friend of mine, Jesse Pearson, who we still play a lot with, we just kind of picked up trying to learn how to play the fiddle and the banjo on our own and just listening to different stuff and all the old recordings and everything and trying to learn how. And then we met Kim at an Appalachian Studies conference. And that's really like what kind of took us off, because, you know, like... Kim introduced us to lots of different people, and like, so we got to learn, you know, much more effectively from people who knew what they were doing rather than just trying to teach ourselves in a vacuum type mm-hmm. of thing.
Do you remember the first time you heard old time?
It was kind of like it got closer and closer. So I probably heard, you know, like I'd hear things that were like influenced by old time. You know, like they like Old Crow Medicine Show and stuff right. like that. And I like that stuff, you know, so it was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. And then I remember I heard Chance McCoy's album, like his solo album that he put out. And that was probably like the first, like just, you know, like old time, like fiddle music type stuff that I'd heard. And that kind of turned me on to like, old recordings of people. So I don't really remember like the first instance of it or anything like that, but I do remember going to Vandalia and seeing like seeing Lester McCumbers play like in the contest and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And just seeing all these guys, you know, that knew each other and were jamming and stuff and just walking around and listening to them. And that was probably about 2008 or something like that. Uh-huh. Probably the first one I went to.
So how did the encounter at the Appalachian Studies conference happen?
Well, we were, like me and Jesse Pearson and another friend of mine, we had a little group.
Yeah.
And we were kind of, we were playing around. We'd get like gigs and stuff, you know.
At the Black Sheep and places
yeah,
like
we'd,
that.
Yeah, we'd play at the Black uh-huh. Sheep, and we'd played at like the V Club, and there was this other bar that it's not there anymore that we played at. But anyway, we'd have little gigs and stuff like that, and we got a gig somehow playing there at that Appalachian Studies Conference. So we were in, basically the gig was just to sit there and play while everybody walked around to the booths and stuff. And so we were doing that, and Kim was there. I guess you were there for Golden Seal.
Yeah, it was there, and there was kind of like a lounge area or something. You know, yeah. We're off to the side. It's I remember it was the only mountain music I heard at the event. And later in the evening, they had all the music. It was Ron Soul and some of the mountain stage people, but it wasn't like old time, you know, like you'd expect at the Appalachian Conference.
Yeah.
So I just went over and introduced myself.
Yeah. Well, you know, we knew Kim, you know, because we had watched, you know, we were really into like, there's, Kim has put a bunch of videos of her and Lester playing on YouTube and stuff. So like, and we had been watching that stuff, and we're like, like that's, you know, we thought it was really great because like, you know, Lester, like here's this really cool old fiddler, and we knew he was from West Virginia, and we you know, we kind of connected with that and thought that was really neat. So we were aware of Kim.
Uh-huh.
And so then like here she is, and she's like asking to play with us, and it was,
wow, so, the star.
Yeah, I know.
It was, approaches you.
Yeah, old time. It was like old time celebrity coming to play.
Oh, geez.
So we're like, yeah, please do.
I never
please
thought about that.
Us. Yeah,
I had fun. That was the most fun I had at the conference.
Yeah,
we drew a crowd, and then people were videoing and everything because yeah. It was the only fiddle banjo stuff available there.
Yeah, wow. And then so from there we just kind of, you know, obviously we wanted to keep playing with Kim.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how that started.
Yep.
And Kim, what did you think? Were you ready to be in a band with these young guys?
Well, who wouldn't be, man? They're nice looking. They play just great. You know, and Lester, by that time, he was getting older and he wasn't playing as much. And he was near the end of his life. And, you know, it just sort of slid into young boys.
Uh-huh. But, so the tables turned.
Yeah, now I'm the old geezer, and you know, because I'm the same age Wilson Douglas was when I started playing with him, I was their age. It's
wow.
Kind of strange if you think about it.
Yeah.
Strange for me, anyway.
So tell me about the Modoc Rounders and the type of music you play, what your repertoire is. Seems like you focus on West Virginia tunes, but maybe not strictly.
Yeah, I mean, we'll play whatever we like. You know, if there's a fiddle tune that we think is really cool, that it doesn't necessarily have to be from West Virginia or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we, you know, we typically think West Virginia music is anyway, so it ends up being mostly West Virginia stuff. And then, you know, it's like the people that we learn from, like Kim introduces us to a lot of stuff. And then other people that we know, like Bobby Taylor and David O'Dell and John Morris and different people like that, you know, so we pick up a lot of tunes and stuff from them. So, yeah, we try to stick to West Virginia stuff, you know.
For the most part,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, had you taught anyone before?
Not really, like one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
But a few workshops here and there, which are not my favorite at all. Like groups, you know? Oh, man. Oh.
Just because there's too many people to pay attention to?
Well, yeah, but it's pretty much rotten if they don't have a fiddle player in there with the help. Backup style, I guess you call it.
Uh-huh.
Maybe lead playing. And if I'm in there by myself, it's kind of bad for the people, I think. But it's all right. It's not my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done one before, and Cody could already play really good.
Right. And so with the Modoc Rounders, what are some places that you've played?
Well, lot around here.
Yeah, we've played a lot of things around here, you know, like we
a lot of dances. Yeah. I love those.
We played a lot of square dances, and then we played concerts at, like, the Vandalia Gathering and the State Folk Festival in Glenville, and Clifftop. We played dances at Clifftop. And then just little shows and things, you know, people ask us to play for this and that, so we do that. And then we've got the chance to play at Port Townsend, Washington, at the Festival of American Fiddle Tunes.
Mm-hmm.
That was a couple years ago we got to do that. That was the first time Jesse or I had ever done anything like that.
That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then we got to go to the Berkeley Old Time Music Convention.
From that?
Yeah, last year in Berkeley, California. And stuff. So
then we went to the Minnesota thing.
Yeah, and then we played in.
That was last March.
Yeah, Minneapolis.
Whoa, that it was colder than heck, man.
Yeah.
Like first weekend in March.
Woo! Yeah.
So that was right before the pandemic.
It was last year.
Yeah, last
oh, last year. Last year.
Yeah.
So do you feel like there's a interest in West Virginia old time music outside of the state?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I would say probably there's more interest outside of the state than there is inside of the state, you know. And I don't know, I guess it's probably got to do with, like, if you go to a place like San Francisco or the Berkeley area, there's just so many more people that there's bound to be people who are interested in any kind of little niche interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and around here, I don't know, but there is interest around here. It's just not
as rabid like.
Yeah, that. It's not as yeah.
Like in Minnesota, we sit down in a hall and played a little tune or two, and all of a sudden there's all kind of people there, and these people kept saying, "You're not from here. You're not from here." You know, they really liked it up there. They did.
That's cool.
That was fun.
So tell me about the apprenticeship and what your goals are, and why you wanted to kind of expand beyond just playing in a band together, to focus on banjo.
Well, I think,
It's hard to know.
I mean, I think the big goal for me, the thing that I've gotten most out of it, is just is like kind of connecting to the people that Kim knows. You know, a lot of those people I'm aware of, and I know kind of on a like an intellectual level, like a, you know, like where they lived and when, you know, what they did and what they played and stuff like that. But Kim, you know, like, knew those people.
I get right down in there.
She had a relationship with those people, and like more, so much more familiar with their lives and like the way that they played and everything. And like, so a lot of what we've done has not been so much like, here's the notes, you know, that go in this tune. Kim is more all about just like telling stories about like this or that person. And
well, that's so interesting what they do and what they said. And you know, before this pandemic thing, I sort of thought we could take Cody over to hang out with Dwight Diller some.
Right.
Maybe Ron Mullinex down in Bluefield. And maybe, mm-hmm. you know, it's not happening now.
Yeah, right.
One thing that we've got to do, though, is Kim is like a library of like archival recordings and footage and stuff. So she has shared a lot of that with me. And, you know, like she just, this morning when I came over here, she gave me a few volumes of like Ed and Hammond's recordings and stuff. So that's great. I'll crack into that. And, she gave me a little letter that, Genus Cottrell had written.
Oh.
Before he died, about like what he wanted his funeral to be like and what he wanted to be dressed in his casket and stuff.
Wow,
like,
that's amazing.
Hair combed, and he wanted to wear a certain kind of a shirt with his silver dollar belt buckle, and it just went on and on. He said,
that's amazing.
Someone owes me money. Don't collect that money from them. And so-and-so else owes me money, but you can let that slide. I mean, and the guy was going to be dead, and he was like,
yeah.
I don't know when he wrote that. I guess a year or two before he died.
Yeah.
It was very strange. Sylvia O'Brien gave it to me.
Who gave it to you?
Sylvia O'Brien.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And it's just, I got truckloads of stuff like that, and I didn't intend to have a stockpile of it, but I guess I do.
Yeah. So what are you going to do with that? Is it going to go to an archive eventually, or?
I don't have any idea.
Well, I would encourage you to, I mean, I imagine the state would take it, especially considering your Golden Seal role. But it would be awesome if that was preserved somewhere.
Like if you donate something to the museum,
like
a banjo or a fiddle, they say, oh, how nice, blah, blah, blah. And then they put it in a museum storage and it never comes out again. Nice to have it like on display somewhere where people could at least see stuff. And I understand big collection of things, but.
Yeah, well, maybe a place, I mean, Berrio could be a good spot for it, especially because they have that digital archive of Appalachia where all of it's available online.
Yeah, I like to do it in West Virginia, though.
Yeah, I know. Well, maybe WVU.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, we should talk. We're sending our stuff to WVU, and they've been pretty great to work with. So just would love to see that, you know, in climate-conditioned.
I remember at the early Vandalia gatherings, Genus Cottrell would have he had a foot-powered wood lathe because he didn't have electricity. And they would set it up out there on that plaza deck, and he would have some of the banjos and stuff that he made, and he would do demonstrations, which was very cool. And that wood lathe, they had a thing, you moved your foot on it, and it sort of cut the, you know, roll back and forth, and it was very cool. When he died, they donated it to the museum, and has never seen the light of day since.
Oh, that is too bad.
He died like in 1980 or 81.
Wow. Maybe we need a mountain music museum here.
That'd be
specifically
great.
Dedicated.
That'd be really cool.
It'd be very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we should brainstorm about that. So, goals for the apprenticeship. And how are you documenting some of these stories that Kim tells you?
Well, you know, that's something I probably should be doing more, you know, a better job at, is like, as far as documenting. I mean, I guess.
I don't know how would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I would be open to some suggestions about like how to better doc, maybe make recording, like some audio recordings, maybe of some of that stuff. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
audio recordings would be cool. I think when Jen worked with John Morris, she kept a journal.
Yeah.
And would just write stuff down. And I think she's planning to do some little zine, with some of those Clay County stories he told her.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
I couldn't do anything like that, but
I don't know what to do stuff. I've got, 15 or 20 cassettes, because at the time they didn't have digital, but Wilson Douglas telling stuff.
Oh, wow.
So I'd say, here, tell me about this, anything, and he'd talk about what we do and stuff, or growing up and music and just anything. And now it's like, well, how am I going to do with this? It's very cool.
Right. Well, do you have anyone, can you digitize those at all?
They are digitized, but you
know. Oh, that's good.
They are, what's his name? Jeff Bosley did it. Down at
Huntington. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what do you ever do with something like that? I mean.
Right. Put it in an archive.
We would take any, you know, of course we haven't been able to do it much now, but like, you know, when we did play, especially play for audiences who were interested in old time and didn't just happen to be like a bar or something we were playing, you know, I always try and make a point, especially like when we went to Berkeley and the Port Townsend and stuff, you know, I try and pass on the things like that Kim has told me about, or like other people have told me about tunes and stuff, you know, and
they really like that, I think.
Yeah, people, you know, that's really what I think that this, the music is all about people's like relationships with each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the stories and stuff about the tune and things like that. So that's what people are drawn to, I think, mostly.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way, it lives in the oral tradition too.
Yeah.
Just telling stories.
Turn the recorders off. When the song's not happening or the tune's not playing, if the player just starts talking about their life or their history or anything, they cut it off. They don't record that.
I know.
I saw that happen to Nat Reese at the Cultural Center one time. He gave a little blues guitar workshop one time free out in the Great Hall.
Uh-huh.
And 25 people came. No black people, just now, you know. They didn't come. And he started talking about my black kid growing up and how his dad was a coal miner and all this stuff. And and then he'd sing a song, you know. And then they record the song, but then after the song was over, this click, 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 turning off. It was like, what?
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, I interviewed Phyllis Marks before she died, and she knew when I had turned off the recorder because that's when she started telling me dirty jokes. So yeah, what have your sessions been like? Coping with the pandemic. Do you meet outside and wear masks? Do you just play together?
Yeah,
mostly it's just.
We've gone to Bobby's a couple times.
Yeah.
And out here on the porch, you know.
It's been less frequent than I'd like it to be. You know, I'm afraid of, you know, possibly passing things on, you know, stuff like that as far as COVID goes. So I've been less willing to hang out as frequently. But when we do, you know, it's mostly a lot of Kim will show me. She's like, oh, I found this cool video of the Morris Brothers concert from the 70s. She's like, watch this. And then so we'll watch that. And then we'll, you know, then we just kind of play some tunes. And then and she's like, oh, well, look at this. Here's French Carpenter's bow. It's just kind of like that, you know. It's just Kim pulling random things out that I'm fascinated with.
I should organize it better.
Yeah,
but like a show and tell.
Yeah, it is. It is a lot of show and tell. As far as like, you know, we're talking about like banjo stuff techniques. There's not a whole lot of like technical instruction, but Kim will tell me if I'm doing it wrong or if I'm doing it right.
She can't see. Can you still see, or are you just?
No, recording? I can't. I can't see right now.
Uh-oh.
But we can turn it on. Turn it back on in a little bit if you have some stuff you want to show off.
Something extra cool.
Oh, cool. I did see you're taking care of a Genus Cottrell banjo.
That's it.
I knew it.
I'm going to keep it for a while.
That's cool. So, yeah, what do you see as the kind of long-term impact for the apprenticeship? So, I mean, we hope that this will deepen apprentices' understanding of the form and then kind of reaffirm a commitment to, you know, make sure the tradition continues. So, yeah, how do you see that happening?
Well, I mean, I feel very committed to that, you know, already, and that's why I wanted to do the apprenticeship. I mean, I felt like committed to it as it is, and to me, I see the apprenticeship as just kind of like just taking that a step forward as far as like being in contact with like you and the Humanities Council and also just giving us an opportunity, more of an excuse to dive a little deeper into it. But it's, you know, it's broadened my knowledge about about the people who used to play. And really, you know, like I'm interested in those people as well, but I'm also interested in like the people who are currently doing it now, you know, because it's not just something that happened in the early 20th century and then they all died and now it's over, you know. Right. Like in West Virginia, that scene is pretty much, it's still alive. It maybe not like it was, you know, it's obviously different. But, you know, those people are still out there, you know, people like Kim and Bobby and different people across the state who learned and had those relationships with the old timers who are gone. Like we were saying, you know, like now Kim is like the old timer. But, you know, like that's kind of like what I'm also interested in, that and kind of like, you know, focusing on those people and like what they know and like what tunes that they play and everything. I mean, obviously it's all connected and they're super influenced by the older people that they learned from, but
right.
I'm also just as influenced by them. I'm more influenced by them than I am from like from someone I've never met before and just heard recordings of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, you know, like I would love to be able to find some, you know, some other people. I would love to be able to pass it on as well at some point in my life. I, you know,
right.
I don't know how that would look or what it would be like, but
it's a little weird passing someone.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how many? There's not very many like your age. Or Tessa's 20.
Yeah.
She's 10 years younger than you.
Right.
But younger than her. I mean, yeah. There's like
the people who I know that are my age that are interested. They already play and are already very good. You know, and we have a little, you know, a little community, and you know, we hang out and play tunes and stuff, so there's a little scene, you know, even among people like in my generation that are into it. But you know, I would love to be able to expose people and what more people in West Virginia to this music, especially younger people who maybe have like a skewed view of it, or maybe think like square dancing is like corny because it's something that they learned in gym class in middle school, you know, and like they only had like crappy recorded music like Turkey in the Straw or something to learn to.
Right.
But, you know, it'd be cool to like teach them, like take them to like a good square, like a nice good rowdy square dance where like
nice people, good glimble dance.
Yeah, people that their own age are having fun and, you know, and just and see it kind of in its like in the actual context in which
right.
it's meant to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's a lot of, if you don't know about this music, then you're kind of missing out a big part of, it's something to be proud about. If you're from West Virginia, you know, we kind of have, we have to look for things to be proud of in West Virginia. We have a lot of stuff that we're supposed to not be so proud of, which probably rightfully so, but this music and the people that play it and everything, that's something that is interesting that people want and don't have, you know,
mm-hmm.
whereas we, you know, it's ours, you know.
Yeah, what do you think that would look like school programs or?
I think that would be really cool. You know, obviously you can't force it down anybody's throat, and sometimes it's hard to get past like some of the imagery that people might have preconceptions about, like a banjo or something, you know, and trying to avoid like hillbilly stereotypes and stuff like that. But like,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be great to do a school, you know, do maybe school programs just to expose people a little bit, you know, and that's like what Frank and Jane would do, wouldn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, back in the 70s around here, they used to have, each county would have like an artist in residence, and sometimes it'd be like pottery or something, but a lot of times it was music.
Oh, wow.
It just sort of faded away, you know.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I know this guy, Pat Shields.
Mm-hmm.
In Georgia now, but when I was in doing student teaching in Braxton County back in like 73 or 4,
uh-huh.
It's the artist in residence in that county, and he'd go around the schools and he had a fiddle, banjo, and guitar, and he'd play and sing songs and let the kids play them and stuff like that. And he had little groups.
Wow.
It was really cool, but
that's
that just
very cool.
Yeah, it just sort of drifted away.
Yeah.
I think if you expose, you know, if you can expose kids to it, there'll be a handful who do pick it up. But, you know, like, I know that if I was in grade school or something and somebody had come around with a banjo and started talking about history and stuff, because I've always been interested in history and things like that. I would have picked it up sooner, I'm sure, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. So. Yeah. That's one of my hopes for the Folk Life program, that we can have some kind of integrated school program. If we can get some funding for it. And yeah, so who do you see as part of your community these days? That's a question for both of you.
Part of my community, well. I mean, who you play music with, or?
Yeah, who's like the community that is keeping this kind of tradition alive? Where does it live? What are some of the gatherings where you get together and kind of let this music breathe?
Quite a while, me and Cody were going down to Bobby's like once a week.
Uh-huh.
And go out to eat or something and then come play tunes for 2 or 3 hours. And sometimes Andrew Dunlap would come over and, you know, just whoever. Sometimes Tessa, but most of the time it was just us.
Yeah, I think as far as that, Bobby's house is where it lives right now.
Yeah.
in this area, because, you know, Bobby's always down to play some tunes. So, you know, but him and us three, and then Andrew and like John Preston and Testa, and you know, even Henry Barnes, who lives in the Columbus area. You know,
whoever's passing through, it'll happen at Bobby's. They'll have a little jam or something.
Yeah. Nice.
That's one place. And then, you know, like, of course, they're not happening this year, but things like the Vandalia Gathering and Glenville State Folk Festival and Clifftop, mm-hmm. you know, that's where you see everybody that you don't see that regularly, you know, like you kind of catch up with them and you can count on seeing them there at those places every year. And, you know,
right.
I think really, you know, like, I don't know what would happen if those types of things weren't there, you know. Mm-hmm.
Like this year, it's been very weird.
Yeah.
Not even a square dance. No music, no square dances, no anything.
Yeah, all right.
So.
Yeah, is that difficult?
Yeah, it's not.
It's not maybe difficult, but it's just not fun.
It's not fun. Yeah, right.
Well, I think, like, for me, it's like, yeah, I enjoy playing, and we play together sometimes still, you know, but it helps your motivation when, you know, you have like a dance coming up, you know, or like, you know, you're going to be going to Glenville. So, you're going to be jamming with some people that you don't normally get to jam with and see and hang out, you know. So, like, it just kind of gives you a reason to do it, you know. It's
right.
It's not just this. I don't know. I mean, I would play by myself all the time, even if I didn't know anybody else that did it. But it definitely helps.
I'm glad we have a little community.
Yeah.
Some places in the country, people are learning music, I guess, from pipe lessons or something, or YouTube videos or something. And these people don't have anybody else to play with.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. That's how it is for some people, I guess.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, I guess we're kind of in a making do situation right now. I mean, the whole folklore field is built on meeting with people face to face, so it's weird to be doing it through a screen.
Yep.
Well, is there anything else you guys would like to add?
Can't think of
anything. Not that I know of.
So, yeah, normally we would have a showcase in early 2021. And I think we're just kind of waiting and trying to decide what.
Like us show up at the Humanities Council and play a few tunes?
Yeah, kind of like you did. You came and played with
me.
Did you play with Doug? And Annie, or did you play with John?
I played with Jimmy Costa.
Oh yeah, Jimmy Costa. Yeah, it would be kind of like that, but have probably half of the apprentices come do like two of them, and half would come for one and half would come for the other. So that's what we would normally do. We might still do that and just postpone it. But also maybe we could do something virtually. It'd be cool to get some teachers involved and have kids involved with that too. So that's still kind of up in the air. We need to put our heads together and figure it out. But there's just so much uncertainty about when it'll be safe to gather. So maybe there'll be some kind of virtual thing in the meantime, if you're up for it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Be more fun to do it live.
I know, really would. I mean, it's possible we could do both. We can just wait and do it, do a big shebang when we can all be in person. The one thing I'd like to do is get a photo of you guys at some point, and wear a mask and take a picture outside. Is there a good time? Do you know when you'll be meeting next, or you want to just email me about it?
Well, we don't have a certain schedule or anything. We can do it anytime, I guess.
Okay.
Cody's still working, so it's up to him. Whenever you're free, that's great.
I could.
Yeah,
I
Cody, mean, you work like 9 to 5 generally?
Yeah.
Okay.
I could be in touch with you and come up, you know, let you know.
Okay.
Were you wanting to do it like in the next couple of weeks or something?
That could be good. I'm probably going to take some time off in September. But yeah, next week or the week after would work. But I could come like at 5 or something.
Okay.
You wouldn't have to take time off.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll figure out a good day that I could do that and let you know. And I'll shoot for some time, maybe shoot for next week sometime.
Anytime is fine with me.
Okay, cool. That sounds good. Well, thank you guys so much. I'm sorry that these are the circumstances of this apprenticeship, but sounds like you're making the best of it.
Oh yeah.
Sure.
It's different times for sure.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for taking the time this morning too to chat with me, especially Cody, who has to take off work.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Well, take care, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.